Dead deer are piling up on Molokai as drought conditions and other factors contribute to a die-off of the population. The growing number of carcasses attract flies and bring an overwhelming stench that could potentially cause public health problems. That prompted Governor David Ige to issue a disaster declaration to deal with the situation late yesterday. Senator Kalani English and Representative Linda Coit had asked Ige for help, but the solution may not rest solely in the hands of local government. Jake Muse is the owner of Maui Nui Venison. His company has been harvesting axis deer on Maui for over 10 years. The conversation's producer, Russell Subiono, spoke with Muse about managing deer populations across Maui County and potential solutions for Molokai.
Is there a significant difference between the way deer is managed on Molokai as opposed to Maui? Is it just a difference in programs or rules or the amount of hunters?
I mean, it's a great question. There's a bunch of different parts to that. On the recreational side, that is hard to pull because not every hunter is registering either A, in the areas that they're hunting in, or there's lots of folks that I'm sure hunting for subsistence purposes that don't necessarily have like a hunting license either, which is right. One way to track, you know, the number of animals that are being harvested, you know, via, or I guess the term hunting. But there's definitely, you know, anecdotally, there's probably more hunting on Molokai. It's definitely, an ingrained part of that culture, and it definitely is on Maui as well. Maui has, you know, 200,000 to 300,000 acres of available, like, hunting area. On the commercial side and or management outside of public lands, so all of those hunters are, like, most often hunting on public lands, the management of axis deer on private land falls to the landowner. That's not dictated by the state. There's obviously no bag limits or anything else. So each landowner has a different approach, and each landowner finds, I think, different value in different population levels, right?
Yeah.
There's lots of programs. There's lots of folks on Maui that want to see sustainable levels because they find value in them as a hunting resource and a food resource. And there's other folks, like some of our farming community, that have zero tolerance. Like, they can't afford to have any animals on property. So everybody has a very different approach. I think the biggest difference between, you know, Maui and Molokai right now is Maui still has an emerging population. So axis deer weren't introduced to Maui until the late 60s and 70s, and that population is continuing to grow and spread and establish itself. The deer on Molokai have been established for, let's call it, the last 60 years. And so they're at their maximum density, and that's only going up and down each year with available feed. And what we're seeing on Molokai this year is a self-correction with a perfect combination of, you know, drought conditions, and probably what's probably leading to the problem is the previous 5 years were really excellent conditions. So I think what, like, not a lot of folks are talking about, in the previous 4 to 5 years, we've had almost perfect amounts of rain and dry weather to see populations, like, proliferate. And so what we're seeing now is maybe a trend back to some of the typical weather we saw 8-10 years ago, and there being an overabundance of axis deer and something outside what their own balanced densities have looked like on Molokai for the last, you know, 40-50 years. And this is that correction. It's them, you know, equaling themselves out, right?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, nature always has its own ebbs and flows.
Yep.
Everything moves in cycles. And so it seems like this is the cycle where there's too much demand for food and not enough supply. And it sounds like the real issue is that the carcasses are stacking up, and that it poses a health issue. Do you have any insight into how that's happening? Do you have any friends or relatives on Molokai that are dealing with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that as starvation starts to set in and they become lethargic, they'll start moving around a lot less and going to where the only available feed is, and that's usually roadways. Because you're going to have a little bit of runoff, like water runoff or dew that's coming off of that asphalt or cement, collects on the side of the roads, and that's when you're driving around, you see that little bit of green grass. So they're, like, moving towards roadways, which are obviously highly visible, and they're moving towards backyards, which are highly visible. And in the end, that's why everybody's seeing it. They're probably not seeing what I'm sure are hundreds, if not thousands, of deer that are potentially dying in other locations as well. But it's becoming much more visible because they're also moving away from their daily habits. Axis deer are actually primarily nocturnal. They like to do almost the vast majority of their feeding and moving around at night.
Okay.
We've done several collared studies of, like, track movements and what they eat. And these are primarily nocturnal animals. It's one of the reasons we only harvest at night for the commercial side of what we do. And so what you're also seeing is them taking very uncharacteristic behavioral patterns, and which means they're showing up in people's backyards in the middle of the day when they would have never seen that before. That deer could have very well have lived, you know, 300 yards away from that person in a holly coal forest and them not know they were there. But now they just don't care. They're just trying to find food if and when they can. And I think that's probably part of the issue as well, is people are just seeing them at times and in places they usually wouldn't.
Which island were deer imported to first? Was it Molokai?
Yeah, it was Molokai, late 1800s. They were, contrary to popular belief, we were able to look at a couple of old Hawaiian newspapers, and they weren't actually a gift to the king. There's language that says, like, he was desirous to obtain them. They came down the Yangtze River on a boat called the Loch Nagar, and they're a really interesting story, but they were introduced to Molokai in the late 1800s, and really interesting, as early as 1910, there's articles in newspapers saying they had a California company come over and harvest 5,000 deer in 1910 because they were already starting to destroy the forest on Molokai. So management efforts, you know, it's so interesting. The same year, there's arguments within like the governmental time frame. I think it was Unalio or somebody brought one over to Oahu and got into big trouble. So it's interesting, like, management for axis deer has been ongoing since the early 1900s, and have people have agreed to disagree for that same period of time. And I think that'll, you know, continue. But in the end, it's something that has to be addressed, and there'll be different solutions in different places, and, you know, specifically with different landowners, because they have that choice as their own. And so there's definitely no straight answer for sure.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as you were speaking about it. Some government help and some government intervention seems like it's one part of the solution, but it also seems like another part of the solution has to come from landowners and the community. Does it seem that way to you, that it's sort of a multi-pronged approach or a multi-pronged solution?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are very, very clear, straightforward solutions. Like, for instance, on Molokai, if you want to grow anything, you need a fence, period, end of story. There's no level of management, you know, even in the next 5, 10, 15 years, even if the community can decide on it, that you still need that fence. So, and the farming community, I mean, it's the Molokai farmers, that's the name of their high school. Like, they're intelligent, they can do it really well. They just need that, they need help with that tool. There's lots of great avenues to funnel, you know, that type of funding through, so that fencing can be made available along with a great farm plan and the other things that would go into like that ask for a grant. Maui is a completely different story. Right now on Maui, you know, with an emerging population, every single deer harvested makes a difference. The effort to balance populations on Maui is significantly easier than finding some level of balance on Molokai. So again, it really depends on like what's happening in those different places. Like, again, it's just my personal opinion, but money spent on, you know, immediately reducing populations on Maui for the same dollar spend has a much more, like, a much significant impact for Maui versus that same dollar value spent on fencing on Molokai would have a much greater impact on the ag industry as a whole there. The hard thing on Molokai is when you're dealing with an established population who's essentially now only keeping itself in check. Typically, with an emerging population on Maui, you see a 33% reproductive rate, or like as a function of like total herd dynamics, you'll see a growth of 33% a year. On Molokai or Lanai, where the population is already established, you're only seeing a 12 to 15% increase in population each year, and that's varying based on like their collective health and what the feed is available. The scary part is if you go in and you don't harvest enough animals. So let's say you went into Molokai numbers aren't exact, but let's say you harvested 10,000 animals and it wasn't enough to change those population dynamics. There's going to be more feed available the subsequent year, more fawns are going to survive, and you will actually have an increase in population on the following year versus what you were trying to do.
Wow.
So you got to be super careful too. Like, the solution isn't, well, we'll kill a couple thousand deer, or we'll euthanize a couple thousand deer and it's going to make a difference. On Molokai and Lala'i, if you don't get that number right, it's going to get worse. So part of it is like having really clear population data and a clearly structured management plan that inclusive of their communities, you know, thoughts and the different places and landowners involved. And so it's complicated, and it has to be, I think, really well thought out on a place like Molokai. Maui, because the population is currently at, we have about 50,000 deer on Maui, and that's going to move to 210,000 deer unless we get ahead of that curve. Every deer right now makes a difference on Maui in that curve, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to stay at 33% until they're doing what they're doing on Molokai, which is, you know, eating themselves to death. So, again, really different solutions for different places. Hopefully this brings light to the situation, and, you know, communities on Molokai can come together, and you know, landowners on Maui that do have access here right now can, you know, move forward with some additional help from the government and some of this funding that hopefully becomes available to, like, again, if they can just bring some of these tools forward for our private landowners and communities, that's a big first step for sure.
Right on. Thanks for your time, Jake.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Russell. Thank you very much.
That was the conversations. Russell Subiono talking with Maui Nui Venison's owner, Jack Muse. You can learn more about the efforts to balance access deer populations, impacts their local environment, communities, and food systems at mauinuivenison.com.